How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. He is out roaming the strip for the stuff that they look for in The Hangover. Let's all hope that turns out a little bit better for him than it did for those fellas. I am joined instead by Darius Soriano of Foreign Blue and Gold and of the Laker Film Room podcast. Darius, what size would you like me to order pre-order your Summer League champion shirt?
Oh, you're back in the mix, right? Wasn't looking too good for you after a couple of games, was it?
I was a little nervous, I can't lie. I was, you know, it didn't look great for the Lakers, but fortunately, like, this tournament is set up that, you know, everybody complains that the NBA regular season doesn't matter at all, when I really think the Summer League regular season is even more meaningless. My column.
Yeah, yes, write that up, please. Let's get 800 words on that.
So yeah. Darius and I are going to talk about Summer League. We're going to talk about the process that the Lakers have gotten to piecing together the roster that they're going to be going in on. As always, follow the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Let's go ahead and start, though, with Summer League. It's kind of weird, right? Like, the reaction after that first game from people who wanted to see Lonzo fail or predicted that Lonzo would fail was, see, he can't do this. He can't get separation. He can't do that. He turns the ball over too much. And whatever it is, somehow they were, in that moment, they were cool with gleaning whatever they gleaned from Summer League. And then as soon as Lonzo started tearing everybody to pieces in Summer League, well, then Summer League didn't matter, right? Now the stats that he's getting are empty stats, even though they're winning. And he ducked De'Aaron Fox, apparently, which was too bad, only to get to Dennis Smith Jr. And I thought he was the best player on the court, even with Dennis Smith Jr. playing pretty well in that in tonight's game. What have your hyperbole aside, because I know Pete is pretty high on Lonzo, but hyperbole aside, what do you think, like, could Laker fans look forward to 75% of this production next year from Lonzo?
Oh, it's hard to put a number on, like, what he'll actually be next year in terms of raw counting stats. And I don't necessarily think Summer League's a good predictor of carrying over these types of counting stats. I wrote about Lonzo the other day at the site, and the premise of my piece was that I don't really care that it's Summer League. The Lakers have something special in Lonzo Ball. And I've come to that conclusion more from the standpoint of the impact that he's having while on the floor, even independent of the numbers that he's putting up. Mm-hmm. So folks can get numbers in Summer League, and that doesn't necessarily make them NBA players or good NBA players, mm-hmm. I should say.
Matt Johnson's shooting something like 83,000% from three-point range.
I think his true shooting percentage is like 150. But the way that he is getting his numbers to me is more important than the numbers themselves. And so it's sort of a process versus results type of thing. In Lonzo's case, it's both process and results. And so folks who love counting stats can look at his counting stats and say, aha, look, he's got it. But for me, it's more look at the way that he's actually playing, look at the impact he's having on the game, on his teammates, just the general style of play, which is to me totally influenced by the style that he's bringing to the court. And that's really why I think they have something in him. And when I'm looking at a prospect in general, or any player, it really helps to have some elite attribute that you can go to every game. And Lonzo's got, to me, a couple of those. One is his passing ability, and tied into that is his feel for the game. And those are things that, you know, I don't know if his assist numbers are going to carry over, but I know that his passing ability will.
His instincts to me, like you pointed out, his ability to attack closeouts, right? And I think that has a lot to do with when he doesn't have the ball, you can kind of see him scanning what's around him so that as soon as he catches it, he kind of has an idea of how to attack the defense from that point. And that's the other elite thing. It's just I've never seen a rookie as smart as he is. It's insane.
Yeah, he's just got a natural feel to play basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, his head is always up. He's consistently glancing and scanning the floor in ways that are sort of working in his mind like a supercomputer, basically. You know, there was a play, not this game, but the previous game where he was driving hard to his right hand, and then he ended up throwing this like over the head that looked like a no-look pass. And it basically was a no-look pass to a player who was basically right behind him, spotting him for a three-pointer. And I can't recall who that player was. Now, when he drove hard to his right hand, sort of towards the baseline, he didn't look back over his right shoulder to see if that player was still there. What he did is he looked over his left shoulder, and he looked over his left shoulder to see if the rotation was coming to where he was going to throw the ball. And so really smart players, and I've noticed this at least, is that really smart players have this ability to sort of take pictures of the court and process that instantly. And it's almost like, I don't know if you have an iPhone or not, but there's like this burst mode on your iPhone when you're taking pictures, and you just hold down the mm-hmm. picture button, and then, you know, it rattles off, you know, 20, 25 or 30 pictures right in a row. And that, to me, that's kind of how Lonzo's brain seems to work when he's on the court. He's taking these mental pictures, but he's taking them in burst mode. And so he's seen where people are moving on the court. He's processing that information instantaneously, and then he's making reads in real time. And it's just impressive to see any player play that way. But it, to me, it's especially impressive to see a 19-year-old player play that way.
And that makes me think that now look, thinking of the game offensively and defensively are two very different concepts, but it's a good place to start when you know somebody can think of the game at the high level that Lonzo Ball is currently thinking about it, especially offensively. And you know, defensively, if he's doing the same thing, you know, it's kind of like those defenders who are always just kind of looking around them, making sure, you know, that taking those same, you know, snapshots of what's going on around them. If he can carry that over from the offense to the defensive side, even if people aren't convinced that he's gifted enough athletically to affect the game defensively, all it takes is having the instincts to not be terrible, right? That's all. just don't be, you know, like Isaiah Thomas to me is somebody who, yes, he's great offensively, but then I watch him play defensively and he's awful. And I don't know if you can rely on that and have consistent success as the playoffs get deeper. Lonzo, I think it's within the realm of possibility that, look, he could be good defensively, I think, but I think at the very least he won't be awful.
I think he's going to be a positive team defender for most of his career. And to be fair to him too, he's got good tools for a defensive player. So, I mean, you brought up Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is, you know, he's 5'11 or something like that.
That's being generous.
You know, and Lonzo Ball is 6'6". And even if he just has a normal wingspan, you know, in like the 6'7", 6'8 range, I think he might be at 6'9". I'm not sure because we didn't get official measurements because he didn't go to the combine. So let's just say that he's a 6'6 guard with a 6'8 wingspan. Those are good tools. You know, he's got good anticipation and he does understand how to move around the floor defensively. Now, certain types of players are going to give him problems in isolation, in man-to-man situations, and I could, you know, talk for 5 or 10 minutes about some of the things that I see that he does poorly defensively in terms of, you know, how he slides his feet or how he sits too high in his stance or, you know, things like that. But he's got really good hands. He knows where to be in terms of help situations. You can, if you really watch him play in help situations defensively for, you know, 2 or 3 possessions in a row, you can tell that he has a pretty good understanding of what teams are trying to do offensively to try to attack the defense. And he finds his way to the ball a lot. I think that's also reflective in how good of a defensive rebounder he is, that he really seems to read the ball well and is able to track it well. And that's coming off the rim. It's when it's reading when and how players are going to pass based off of, you know, their offensive setup. You also see him making, now, I think that he gambles a little bit too much in the passing lanes, like in transition, but you see him making reads in the open court defensively as well, similar to the reads that he might make offensively. So he is, to me, a lot of times jumping the right passing lane. It just may not be the right play to make at that time. Yeah. And he's gotten burned a few times doing that. But look, I'm not going to say that he's going to be some lockdown defender, because I don't think that that's going to be the case. But I think that he can be a positive defender early on in his career. I don't necessarily think that's going to be next year. But I think within his first 2 or 3 years, I don't think we'll necessarily be talking about him as this major defensive liability.
Yeah, and the other thing, or the last thing I wanted to, this is a little bit more intangible than the tangible analysis of what he can do on both sides of the ball. But look, we've seen D'Angelo Russell play in Summer League. We've seen Julius Randle play in Summer League. We've seen Brandon Ingram play in Summer League. And at no point in any of their first go-arounds in Vegas did I feel nearly as excited as I do currently about Lonzo. And look, again, maybe things just fell the right way for him. Maybe his game just translates. I think his game translates a little bit better because he makes the game so much more simple for himself by getting the ball up the court as quickly as he does. But with all that said, at no point, you know, even with Russell, and I am about as big a Russell fan as people will find, as people like to remind me on my timeline and in my mentions. But I never, at no point was I ever, like, this almost giddy, honestly. Like, before today's game, I was giddy to watch him go up against Dennis Smith Jr. I can't have ever said that about anybody else on the Lakers over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I would say, actually, the person who showed me flashes that got me most excited was probably Randle. Mm-hmm. And in terms of comparing it to the feel that I get from Lonzo, Lonzo's, you know, the my excitement is so much more pronounced, and it's over a much longer or extended period of time, right? Like in terms of over the course of a single game and then from game to game to game. But when you were talking, one of the things that came into my head instantly is about Randle, and then with Lonzo as well, is that they're sort of unconventional for their position, mm-hmm, within positional norms of today's NBA versus what like Ingram and Russell are. Yeah. And that's nothing against Ingram and Russell. I think that Ingram and Russell are both going to be, you know, really good NBA players. Excellent NBA players. It's just that the skill sets and the way that they play the game, their players who play that same exact style sort of littered across the league, you know, and maybe not exactly the same style or you know, the same physical tools, or, you know, there's nuance to every single player that makes them unique and their own self. But Lonzo specifically, he just plays a very different style than what NBA guards are playing now, or lead guards, I should say. And you see that in some of the comments that Rob Pelinka made today, just about, you know, scoring guards and how he's not taking anything away from them. And there's some great ones across the league. But there's not really a lead guard right now who plays like Ball. Mm-hmm. You know, the closest I would say is sort of like Ricky Rubio a little bit, but Rubio does not necessarily throw ahead as much as Lonzo does. Mm-hmm. And he is definitely not the same type of shot taker that Lonzo is.
Absolutely not.
Right. And so Lonzo to me is, and I talked about this a lot, both on the Laker film from Film Room Pod and sort of just in general when I've been on other podcasts and at my site as well, is that this is sort of what makes him such a unique prospect, is that there's really no one I can really compare him to in the last, you know, 5 or 10 drafts where he is like, oh yeah, like this guy, he plays like that guy. No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Like he sort of, for the last, you know, 10 years or so, this guy's sort of an original prototype. And I think that that's exciting for fans. And it's one of the reasons why fans are really quick to sort of grasp onto him as this hope. It's because, at least for me, well, we don't really see a guy like this. And the idea that he can, that not only that he can, but he likely will improve and get better and refine his game, and this uniqueness that he's bringing to the court already, that that's only going to improve over time. Like that's something that fans are just excited about.
Yeah,
there's no other way to put it, really.
I'd go so far as to say that, like, I completely agree with everything you said about, like, not finding comps. And I think people try to find comps a little too hard, where, like, things get forced and that you get, like, left-handed players can only be compared to left-handed players. And, like, tall white guys can only be compared to tall white guys. It's this weird thing that kind of goes on. I don't think it's a fool's errand to try to compare Lonzo to literally anybody who's been, almost ever, you know, maybe kid, maybe, but like even back then they weren't shooting from nearly as far as Lonzo was while he was at UCLA, you know, and you know, you get like this, you hear Rajon Rondo with a jumper. Well, like that's not Rajon Rondo anymore. The number one thing I think about with Rajon Rondo is that he can't shoot. That's the first thing that jumps into my mind. And with Lonzo, it's just, he's Lonzo Ball, and he's fun to watch, and I would imagine he's thrilling to play with. And like, if I was Larry Nance Jr., I think Larry Nance Jr. actually texted Walton, right? That was the report that came out that he texted.
Yeah, Walton said that during one of his interviews.
That Nance Jr. just texted him out of the, holy crap, these lead passes are amazing, you know? And he's making Kyle Kuzma, like, go ahead, a fun exercise right now or during any Laker game is just Twitter searching Kyle Kuzma steal. And it's just a whole bunch of people who are saying Kyle Kuzma is the steal of this draft, you know? And it's because he learned, hey, if I run the court and you know, I get down the court as quickly as I possibly can, there's a good chance I'll get two or three easy buckets. And that's put him in a nice rhythm to play the way he's been able to play throughout this thing. I wanted to quickly touch on a couple of the guys and kind of let that lead into a larger discussion about the Lakers roster currently. I just alluded to Kyle Kuzma. Ivica Zubac has been pretty disappointing. And if I'm the Lakers, like, they already they traded for what I think is the best version that Ivica Zubac can be, right, in Brook Lopez. And if you're going to go to the bench and, you know, the guy who's coming off of the bench is basically a lesser version of the guy who just went to it, then that doesn't really do much to change the pace of the game. So, like, my question is, after watching Zubac play here, and this isn't like me overreacting because I didn't like what I saw from Ivica Zubac. It's literally me asking, like, where does he fit in this roster, even if he plays up to the ceiling of, like, just normal progression from last year to next year?
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I've been looking at it from the exercise of, well, the Lakers have a lot of power forwards who need minutes, and that's even before you count Kuzma. I was counting Deng as a power forward as well, mm-hmm. not necessarily that he needs minutes, but that, you know, I don't think the Lakers are just going to sit back and say, okay, well, here's $18 million and you're never going to play at all. Mm-hmm. I just don't see that happening. And so I was counting Julius Randle as a power forward, obviously, and then Larry Nance Jr. as a power forward, and then Luol Deng as a power forward. And then, so there's 96 minutes between power forward and center. And let's just say Brook Lopez plays anywhere between 27 and 29. I think he played 29 minutes last year, about. Mm-hmm. And so that leaves about 18 or 19 minutes, or anywhere between, you know, 20, anywhere between 18 and 20 minutes, essentially, at center. And then you've got 48 minutes of power forward, and you've got three guys who you likely want to give minutes to there, and that's not enough. So to me, one of those power forwards is going to have to play center. Last year, Julius Randle did that a fair amount. And so if you want Julius Randle to play, you know, 30 minutes a night, and I think that might even be conservative, but let's just say that it's 30 minutes a night. If he's getting, you know, 20 of those minutes at power forward, then he's going to get 10 of those minutes in at center, I think. And so now the 18 to 20 minutes that you got at center is now down to 8 minutes.
Yep.
You know? And so who is going to play those minutes? Like, maybe it's Zubac, but maybe you just up Randle's minutes to, like, maybe he plays center for 14 minutes a night in order to get Larry Nance more court time. Or if Luol Deng shows that he's actually much better at power forward, which I think he would be, then maybe you get Deng minutes. Or maybe Kuzma's good play from summer league carries over to the regular season, and he finds a way to scrap out anywhere from 8 to 12 minutes a night as sort of, you know, this hybrid forward who can stretch the floor. Then you're in real trouble, if you're Ivica Zubac, because then you're going to end up with a lot of lineups with, like, Nance and Randle at power forward and center, or maybe Kuzma and Randle, or Deng and Randle. And that doesn't leave a lot of minutes for Zubac. So I'm not necessarily concerned from the standpoint of, oh, he's his skill set overlap potentially with, well, with Brook Lopez. It's more along the lines of, right now, I don't think Zubats is better than Julius Randle. He probably isn't better than Larry Nance Jr. when you bring in both sides of the ball. And so if you're committed to playing your best players, then he's probably in a minutes crunch anyway with guys who play a different position than him but have more positional versatility in that they can slide up and play some five.
Yeah, I think it is a simple mathematics thing. And like the way I would probably sum this up was, it would be, I think when the Lakers got Brook Lopez, Zubats needed to come into summer and really show that, look, no matter, it doesn't even matter that they have Lopez on the roster, the Lakers need to find minutes for Zubats. And now after watching him play, I just don't feel that way about this kid. And I don't know if I would feel about him, like, I don't know if that would even change, because frankly, like, the kind of center that I would want for Lonzo Ball is the kind that can just rim run like crazy, can switch on pick and rolls, and can defend the rim, or at least box out so that Lonzo could, you know, slide down and get rebounds and get the team running that way. The only thing that I think Zubats can do of all those things is that box out one, that last one. And I just don't want my center to go 1-for-3 when it comes to things that I need, as the Lakers, I would imagine at this point, build their roster around the most special prospect that they have.
Well, it's interesting to me. You know, Zubats obviously has not been in his best form here in Vegas. The things, you know, early on, there were real motor issues during the first, you know, 2 or 3 games. I think some of that's been rectified the last couple of games. He's been moving around the floor a little bit better. He's been rebounding the ball a little bit better. I think he had 7 rebounds against Dallas, and I think he had 10 rebounds the game before against whoever they played. Was that Philly? So some of my concerns there have been, you know, nipped in the bud a little bit. He's been doing better in terms of attacking the rim the last couple of games. He's been less looking at the refs for foul calls, which was something I was disappointed that he was doing so much of during the first 3 or 4 games. And, you know, he's still not catching the ball cleanly, which maybe that's a concern. Maybe it's not. You know, I don't know. He's got really good hands. He's just not showing really strong hands at this point. Like, he's getting his hands on a lot of balls, but then guys are able to strip them away or tie him up or knock it out of his hand. I think he's got a good enough skill set to be a really good partner for Ball. You know, mid-range pick and pop guy. He can dive hard in the pick and roll. He shows enough ability changing ends where, you know, he had that really nice rim run early in the game where Vander Blue hit him with a nice sort of no-look pass in stride that he finished with a dunk. I was more down on him, you know, 4 days ago than I am now. But like you said, and what we were discussing a minute ago, is that it is a numbers game. And I think that Ball really wants to, that with Ball, the Lakers are really going to want to play fast. And we'll see how he fits into that. I still think that I don't necessarily think he needs to lose more weight, although that would probably be nice. Like, I think ideally he needs to be playing at about 250, 255. And I don't know what he's at now, but it's probably closer to 265, 270.
Yeah. And the issue, like you talked about his hands, and this will be the last thing I mentioned. The most frustrating thing that I didn't think I would see from Dwight Howard when he was a Laker was how often he was getting stripped, you know, on his way up. Like, I looked at Dwight, yeah, and I was like, there's no way that guy should ever, he got stripped again. That's too bad. And then with Zubats, it's a lot of, the ball will be in a downward motion on a dunk. And yes, there are some times where he's getting fouled. But when the ball is in a downward motion, when the ball is on its way down, and you're a big, you should at least, at the very least, be able to get the ball to the rim. I saw there have been quite a few plays in this summer that it, you know, the ball would be on its downward motion, and he would get hit either on a foul or the ball would get hit, and the ball would change course. And that, to me, is a little concerning for a big man who needs to be able to finish in these pick-and-roll situations.
Yeah, like, I guess I'm not super concerned about his offensive ability.
Yeah.
I guess, you know? Like, I mean, I don't think the summer is going to highlight some of his best strengths. When you looked at him last year, the things that he was succeeding at was basically he was challenging a ton of shots around the basket defensively. And then offensively, he was found money in a lot of ways. You know, just happened to be around the ball a lot and showed a really nice touch around the rim. And that's basically kind of what got Lakers fans excited. He showed some polish in the post, and all of that really is still there. It's just that he's not necessarily getting the same opportunities offensively, and it's sort of different for him with this specific group. We talked about the difference between Russell and Ball a little bit, but Ball is a much more get downhill player, and that's leading to some good options for Zubats, especially when he flares to like the shallow corner to shoot those baseline jumpers, or he's been the recipient of some nice drop-off passes. But Russell was not nearly the get-into-the-lane player that Ball has shown that he is in Vegas, and that creates different types of passes for you as a big man. And I'm just not exactly sure if he's figured it all out yet. And so I don't want to bury Zubats here. It's just more to me about, okay, well, the fit is not as natural and he's going to need to tweak some things. And I'm not necessarily going to bury him for not figuring it out yet.
Yeah, he has. I mean, the entire summer league team has had, what, 2 weeks to play together? Maybe 2.5. So,
and it's much easier for these wings and guards. Mm-hmm. It just is, like, you know, like Kuzma is the perfect example of this as sort of being this perimeter four who gets to get out and run. If he doesn't get the ball near the basket, he can then just circle and loop right back around to the 3-point line, and he's going to be perfectly fine. Zubats can't do that. That's not his game. At this point, you know, he's going to run, and then he's going to run to the front of the rim, and then he's going to hang out basically 15 feet in, and then he's either going to go set a screen. And the way that Lonzo's been using screens has not been throwing that pocket pass to Zubats diving to the rim the way that like Russell did. So it's just a different style, and we'll see how he adjusts. I'm not necessarily down on Zubats. Like I said, it's more just like, oh, well, I look at the construction and the style that they've been playing this summer, and that's just much more suited to what Larry Nance and Julius Randle do as sort of big men. Their games mesh a little bit better. And I think if everything stays the same from summer league into training camp and into the regular season, we'll see that too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, so the we talked earlier about Lonzo Ball and that his game, the reason he's been so impressive in this summer league has been that both the process and the result have been positive experiences, right? Obviously, the counting stats are there, and then getting to those counting stats, it's not like you called Zubats kind of, you know, found money. Lonzo has kind of created his own money. I'd like to broaden this into where the Lakers currently sit right now. As it looks, the Lakers are going to enter the season with Lonzo at the 1, KCP at the 2, Brandon Ingram at the 3, Julius Randle at the 4, and Brooke Lopez at the 5, which I think that's the best starting 5 that they've had in quite some time, I would say, that they've entered the season with in quite some time. And instead of analyzing that starting five, because there's going to be plenty of time to do that, I don't know if your mentions have been bombarded with this, because I was so critical of the D'Angelo Russell trade. I've had a whole bunch of people saying, you know, when are you gonna apologize to Magic, and when are you gonna apologize to Palenko? You know, when are you gonna apologize to everybody for not believing? And my thing is, the result may be good. Like, the result being that starting five, which is better than any other starting five that the Lakers have had in years, the process that led them there is still concerning, because if the market doesn't dry up completely for KCP, then the Lakers are still sitting there with no real shooting guard and, you know, probably the worst roster in at least the Western Conference, without having their pick moving forward next year. That's a little concerning. But fortunately, things turned out the way they did, and they look to be, you know, okay for next year. But for you, should the process mean as much, or does the process concern you at all anyway?
I mean, not for this year. I think that criticizing the Russell trade to me was always more about that they were planning for 2018, you know, well over a year in advance. And I'm more along the lines of, well, not necessarily that this deal would have been there 6 months from now, because I'm not one of those people. I don't necessarily believe that to be true. It's more just, well, you traded a very young player who I think everyone acknowledges, even within the Lakers organization, is talented, is young, and has the ability to turn into an all-star type of player. And they traded that essentially for a one-year rental of a really good player, a draft pick who, as much as he's lighting up summer league now, has not shown anything in the regular season, although I have high hopes for Kuzma, we'll see, and a bunch of cap space. And so on the face of it, that deal is still at the very most neutral, and at the very worst, you're still like, okay, well, they gave up on a guy who was selected number two in his draft just two drafts ago, and I think by all accounts is a very good player who has, whatever issues you want to discuss about maybe behind the scenes stuff or the thing that happened with Nick Young or on and on and on, we can talk about that stuff and like debate it tit for tat. But I don't think anyone is questioning Russell's talent. And if you are questioning Russell's talent, then you're wrong. So whatever.
I completely agree.
So I think that it's still fair to criticize them or critique that in a way. What I don't think is necessarily fair is to then say, well, then this offseason was going to be bad or like the process. No, it's like this is what they set it up to be like this, and they purposefully put themselves in a bit of a corner, and KCP sort of saved them from that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that their process was bad. Their process was more a two-year process versus a let's do something this summer process. To me, the fact that they were actually able to turn this summer into something tangible, that's good on them. When they got in the room, they were able to close. You know, they didn't close on Dion Waiters, they didn't close on George Hill, but when you look at the deals that those guys signed, I can understand why the Lakers didn't close on those guys. The fact that they got anyone really of meaningful talent, especially a player who I think easily could have gotten at least a 2 or 3 year deal and maybe a 4 year deal at decent money, probably not, you know, $17 million a year, but probably I would imagine in the 12 in like, I think that KCP could have easily gotten the contract that Jordan Clarkson got last summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. And so if we can both agree that he probably could have gotten $50 million guaranteed over 4 years, and the fact that the Lakers were able to instead convince him to take $17 million guaranteed instead, even if it's only for 1 year, then I'm going to applaud them for that. Because, not because like, oh, the circumstances that led KCP to be available, because, but more because, well, they did their job in that instance, and they capitalized on the situation that was in front of them, knowing that going into the free agent period, that they were very upfront and honest, like, we're saving our cap space. I don't anticipate us being able to sign a big name player, right? Because those guys want guaranteed money over multiple years. So that's where I would push back some against you and the result first process, because in the end, I was willing to let their process play out over a year's time. And in reality, the KCP signing doesn't really do anything to that process. The Lakers are still going to have to spread that butter across their bread next summer and recruit heavily and get, you know, at least one big name free agent to sign on, and hopefully two, because that's what they've been telling us is their plan. So if you're telling me that that's the plan, then go out and execute that plan. And I was willing to give them the time to do that, even if I didn't like the optics and the results of the Russell trade. The fact that they actually did get KCP, good on them, and I applaud them for that, because they did something that still fits into their larger vision, and it did not impact that larger vision, and they made their team stronger for this year.
I would probably say that the counter that you put out there is basically, or that others have and can, is that the Lakers, the process that they had going into this, they've remained consistent with that process, and arguably the way this turned out, the result of their process for just this year and moving forward, for this team moving into next year, this is about as well as this offseason could have turned out, given the constraints that they put upon themselves in this process. Does that make sense?
Yes, and if you want to criticize them for making the trade early and then sort of hamstringing themselves going into the summer and putting it out there that they weren't really going to that they were going to keep their powder dry, so to speak, for in order to be able to maximize their cap room for the summer of 2018, sort of giving out their blueprint to everyone. If you want to criticize them for that, then go ahead. I think that that's fair, because they did sort of put these artificial limitations on themselves. But if that was going to be their plan, then I think that they're entitled to let that plan play out. To me, it's much better than what Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak did, which was basically continue to say that their plan was to chase big name free agents, and instead caved at the end.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, and I don't think there's any way to argue with the way Jim and Mitch's plan wound up turning out, and that's why they're gone, you know. And I would say, though, that, you know, if this is, because this is a very similar plan to what those guys had, the difference being that they haven't given some, you know, knee-jerk contract. They are remaining consistent to that plan. But if at the end of next offseason they don't have at least one and probably two superstars, then this plan and this process was, you know, do you think they're capable of moving on from this process? Because I don't know if they necessarily are.
No, well, I think that also, too, that, look, the Lakers, 2018 isn't the only year that you can sign a good free agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there will be more in 2019 and more in 2020. And I think that the Lakers need to have the patience and the vision in order to execute that. I think one of the problems that Jim and Mitch ran up against is that they didn't look to have a talent that was as exciting as the kid that Magic and Rob just happened to be able to draft. And that isn't Mitch and Jim's fault. You know, that if the year that they draft D'Angelo Russell, instead they draft Karl-Anthony Towns, that's a different story. You know?
Luck plays a huge factor. I mean, the fact that they have Lonzo.
Especially when it comes to the draft. Yes, yeah. Especially when it comes to the draft. So,
and even free agency. Like, at no point in Mitch and Jim's tenure did they have a free agent kind of fall in their laps the way KCP did.
Yeah, or even have the sort of rumors around a guy like Paul George surface. You know, there's just a lot that seemingly is going Magic and Rob Pelinka's way. And good on them if they're able to capitalize. I don't think fans are going to complain about, you know, Magic and Rob falling into a little bit of luck here.
Nope,
especially since, you know, the Lakers have not been the luckiest team, yeah. You know? And look, like, I was always, I don't want to say defensive for Jim and Mitch, but I just thought that on some of the things that happened with them, the constraints and the circumstances in which they were operating under were very difficult in terms of the Kobe Bryant farewell, the Achilles tear, you know, even before that with the veto of the Chris Paul trade, the fact that that Dwight Howard never really recovered physically, you know, from his back injury, and then he got hurt with the shoulder. There were a lot of things that just didn't go their way. And I think fans would have been understanding of that if they would have managed things a little bit better at the end and not basically given up the bag to Deng and Mozgov, which is what they did.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I mean, this is where we are now. So I'm not going to – like I don't want to re-legislate the past or anything like that. I just don't think that we need to be hard on Magic and Pelinka for some of the things that they've done. I think that some criticism is fair. I criticize them plenty around the Russell trade. But now we're going to see. Look, we're going to see what happens. We're going to see how Kuzma plays during the regular season. We're going to see how Lonzo plays during this season. You know, these are the moves that they've made. They traded Lou Williams for the pick that became Kyle Kuzma.
And look, to bring this entire conversation kind of full circle, you and I talked about the level of excitement and the extended type of excitement that we've seen with Lonzo Ball. Look, if you and I are feeling it that way, and Harrison, who is like basketball Spock, is feeling that same kind of excitement, then I would only imagine that extends and exponentially multiplies outward among the fan base. And if that does that and maybe extends throughout the entire NBA, look, LeBron at no point sat courtside for any of Russell's games, any of Randall's games, any of Ingram's games. He wasn't there for that. And some of this is just funny timing. It just happened to work out that way. But this excitement, this tangible level of potential that Lonzo seems to have, that's a good thing. That's something that, again, you talked about luck, and we talked about the luck that Magic and Pelinka currently have. That's something that's going to help them, you know, kind of talk to LeBron and talk to Paul George without necessarily having to talk to them. If Lonzo carries over, if Lonzo's level of play carries over from Summer League into next season, that's more than any rookie that the Lakers have currently had or have had could have done. And that's hopefully it all turns out well for the Lakers. Anything else that you wanted to touch on before we get out of here?
No. I think that basically sums it up. You know, the Lakers, as much as folks were high, look, I've been high on Randall. I was very high on Russell. I think that amongst a lot of people, like, I probably have maybe a higher opinion of Brandon Ingram than some other folks who write about the Lakers or talk about the Lakers a lot. I think he's going to be a really, really good player. And so, look, I've been very high and excited about those guys. Ball, to me, brings a different level of that. And maybe it's because I grew up watching Magic Johnson play, and the aesthetic that he brings to the floor is my type of aesthetic that I favor that. So maybe it's just that, but I don't care. Like, the way that he plays speaks to me. And I think that you see it with fans, that it speaks to them too. And they're wanting to rally behind this kid. And if that carries over.
And he's giving them reason to.
Yeah. Like, and if that carries. Exactly. And if that carries over to the regular season and this team is just fun, and then things line up in next summer where they actually have enough cap space to flirt with two max level free agents, then I think that that's really, at this point, all you can really hope for as a Laker fan. And things look to be on the way in that direction. There's still work to do, but it's looking good towards progressing towards that. And so, look, like, let's just see where it goes. I'm not going to sit here and like try to be a wet blanket about any of this. The excitement level's high. Like, let's ride the wave.
Absolutely. And look, I am probably one of the loudest detractors of, you know, Magic and Rob Pelinka's tenures as there is out there. And I am a lot more optimistic about the direction of the Lakers than I thought I would be at this point, you know, than I would. If you would have told me 2 weeks ago that I would be as optimistic as I currently have about the Lakers, I'd have told you you were crazy. So
just go back a year. Yeah. You know, how I would say that this is the time of the year where everyone's excited in general, right? Everyone's 0-0. Like, there's sort of this feeling in the air that things are going to go well, right? Like, we'll see how things feel like February 1st or something. but as of right now, I think that is when everyone's excited. This year, I think, is even more than last year, coming off of the heels of those tough contracts that the team handed out. And I think that new direction that that this front office is selling, that is, folks are buying it. You know, you may not be buying it personally, Anthony, all of the way, but I think that you at least see the logic of where they're going. So let's just see if they get there.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Do you think, last question here really quickly, do you think Lonzo Ball, if I was still out there in Vegas, I would probably put money on Lonzo Ball for Rookie of the Year. What do you think there?
Yeah, we'll see. If he averages close to 10 assists a game, the way that he's been doing in Summer League, I definitely think that he'll be right in the running. But there's going to be some stiff competition this year, especially, I think, with Ben Simmons.
Yeah, that's the one that people tend to forget about. That.
Yeah, I think Simmons is going to be really good, man. Like, going into the draft process the same year that Ingram was drafted, Simmons popped when you watched him on tape. And I think that if he can stay healthy this upcoming season, he's going to be really, really good, especially with some of the additions that Philly has made with, you know, they got him some shooting with J.J. Redick and Embiid in the games that he did play really broke out. And I just think that they've got a nice collection of players there. And, you know, knock on wood for Philly fans, if those guys are healthy, they're going to be an exciting young team to watch. And to be fair for the Lakers, like, I think they can be too. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep. All right. So that was Darius Soriano of Foreign Blue and Gold. Thanks again for taking time out of your Sunday evening while Harrison out there and has himself a Sunday fun day. Thanks for chiming in.
Appreciate you having me, man. Anytime. Absolutely. Well, maybe.
All right, so we'll talk to Darius again on Wednesday. You guys all heard that.
You've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.